Many people struggle with the idea of seeing a mental health professional, seeing a psychologist or a counselor or therapist, or even talking with their primary care physician about mental health concerns.
Right.
And so today we're going to talk about this author who wrote, What Would a Mental Health Diagnosis Mean to Me?
Mm-hmm.
And in talking about the idea of what does it mean to have a mental health diagnosis?
Right. I really like this article
mm-hmm.
because we all think about this
yeah.
at some time and in some way throughout mm-hmm. our lives. This was written by a journalist,
mm-hmm.
so it's nicely phrased, nicely worded, and it's from a layperson, okay? It's
mm-hmm.
how a layperson thinks about this stuff. And she explains, again, self-disclosure. She explains that she's been struggling with a little depression and anxiety mm-hmm. for her whole life. She's been on medication for six or seven
yep.
years. She's been on medication. So she has been treated. But the frustration for her has been that she's never been given a definitive diagnosis.
Right.
Okay. And I love the way she takes us through the process because she first of all admits, well, I looked it up. I Googled it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she's looking for her symptoms and there's some confusion there
mm-hmm.
because it looks like this and it looks like this and it might be this and it might be that. And so she can't come up with a definitive diagnosis. She's gone to psychiatrists, but not psychologists. Now she's from the UK.
Right.
And I don't know that world well
mm-hmm.
enough to know why she would not go to a psychologist.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just don't know that.
Yeah.
We'll have to ask our friends from the UK
yeah.
Why that happened. But she's been to psychiatrists, and as is often the case, she's been on several different medications,
mm-hmm.
several different interventions have been recommended, and she said, I'm as confused by the advice I get from professionals as I am when I try to Google, when I try
right.
to investigate the issue on my own.
Right.
Okay. So she's still confused whether she tries to do it herself or she gets professional advice.
Yeah. And so, as she describes, the difficulty is when you don't know, when you don't have a specific diagnosis, or there's that ambiguity
mm-hmm.
remains,
yes.
there's this sense of almost incomplete, like you're not sure
right.
why, you don't know, if you don't know, and if you don't know why, you don't know what to do about it,
right.
you know. It, sure, many of the symptoms of depression can be similar to the symptoms of, to mm-hmm. like anxiety.
Right.
But your treatment or the way that you manage those symptoms could be different
mm-hmm.
depending on what the diagnosis is, what's really at the root. And so she says that, you know, without a real diagnosis, there's nothing to sort of hang your hat out.
Right.
There's nothing to say, this is what's going on, so this
right.
is what I need to do. There's no clear direction.
Right. In our field for a long time, there was criticism of what was referred to as the medical model,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we shouldn't be worried about a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me what the child's, and Skinner said that too.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me. I don't care why. You tell me what behavior you want to change and I'll change it.
Mm-hmm.
You can.
Okay. Right.
We have the behavioral technology to manipulate behavior in that way. But we have always believed, and I'm sure I speak for both of us here, we've always believed that it is important to know.
Okay. Sure.
Because you don't treat a person with depression the way you treat a person with anxiety. And I mean you don't use the same interventions
right.
for depression that we use for anxiety.
Right.
Okay.
And if you use the same treatment for depression if you use the same treatment that you do for bipolar disorder
right.
with depression or vice versa, you're going to get some pretty bad
results.
You can make it worse.
And we know that with bipolar disorder, with children. If they have, it's important to know whether they have ADHD or bipolar disorder
mm-hmm.
because that diagnostic decision will drive
right.
your intervention decision.
Right.
And so it is important to know because differential diagnosis
mm-hmm.
leads to differential treatment.
Right.
If you want the right treatment, you begin with the right diagnosis.
Right.
Okay, and that's what she's struggling with in this
right.
article is, what do I have?
Yeah.
You know, she keeps asking, what do I have?
You know? Right. And you know, we come from a perspective because of the way that we were trained.
Right.
You know, you were raised You were trained by old school professionals.
Let me finish this sentence.
And I was trained by an old school psychiatrist who was very old school.
Yeah, we were. That was odd because you were trained by somebody from the same generation that I was trained by, even though we're of different generations.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
But their idea was you have to get the diagnosis right.
Right.
And we can see that with our colleagues who didn't have the benefit of the same type of training.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think of that neurologist friend of ours who says, you know, today's neurologists going through medical school today couldn't tell a seizure if it was happening in front of them.
Right.
And it's because all they go by are diagnostics or by
lab values. Right.
And so, you know, they're just looking for the symptom. Mm-hmm. They're not looking at sort of the gestalt, the overall picture of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And when you don't do that, you don't get the right diagnosis.
They're not as trained in observation. Mm-hmm. You know, years ago, before we had lab values, you had to rely on observation, on visual observation. Today, with lab values, you confirm everything. For example, MRI. Before the days of MRI, you had to use your clinical skills.
Right.
Now that we have MRI, you can forget all that and just put them in a machine and take a picture.
Well, I mean, there's physicians who make diagnoses and start treating patients without ever seeing the patient.
Right, that's right.
They just look at the values and they just...
Right.
And so, she's absolutely right that, you know, she says, for me, seeking a diagnosis is a way of finding a reason and an explanation of why I feel the way that I do.
Right.
And I think that most of our patients feel that way. That's they're here to look for or identify what is wrong, what is causing these symptoms or these feelings that are causing them so many problems.
Why do I have these feelings? Why do I have these symptoms?
Right.
Is it this or this or this? And there is comfort. Mm-hmm. There is comfort in knowing that.
Right.
You know, and I never deny a patient that comfort.
Right. Now, there are two issues with this.
Having said that,
there are at least two issues. Right. I like to balance it out with three, but there's at least two issues here. The first is what often happens and what happened to her is that we often jump to diagnoses. We listen to, we hear a few symptoms, but many professionals don't take the time to dig in and really understand everything well enough to be able to make an accurate diagnosis.
Right.
And so instead what happens is a patient will go see one person and they'll ask questions that lead in a particular direction and then you get that diagnosis. And you may see somebody else and their questions may be a little bit different and it'll lead in a different direction.
That's right.
But we jump to those diagnoses very, very quickly. We have to be careful of that.
The book we use to make these diagnoses is over 400 pages long.
Yeah.
Nobody's read it cover to cover.
Right.
Okay. There are all sorts of small permutations.
Right.
You know, embedded in these hundreds of pages of text is this is the diagnosis that you should make. But then two or three pages later, say, unless there's this. Okay. And those tiny, almost imperceptible permutations are exceedingly important from a diagnostic perspective. You don't get that at Google.
Right.
You don't get that when you look it up at WebMD.
Right.
As valuable as those things, and there's nothing more valuable in the world than to be able to go to those websites and look stuff up.
Right.
I love being able to do that. Because I remember when I had to go to libraries to do it.
Yeah.
We had to walk in the rain to go to libraries.
Well, and not just do you have those sort of exclusionary criteria and things like that, but you have the same exact diagnosis or the same exact symptoms.
Right.
For multiple diagnoses.
Disorders.
So you could have, you know, has difficulty following directions. That could be ADHD. Refuses to follow directions.
Right.
Well, that's an oppositional defiant disorder. So it's, you know, difficulty focusing, difficulty concentrating.
Right. Easily distracted.
Easily distracted. That could be ADHD. That could be depression.
Right.
That could be mania.
Anxiety.
That could be, it could be any number of things. And so when we're just looking at those symptoms, again, depending on how the questions are asked, we're going to go, you know, if we don't take the time to really understand, we're going to lead to improper diagnoses,
which leads to ineffective treatment.
Right.
Might not be the wrong treatment,
right,
but it's ineffective treatment.
Right.
And this woman, as all of us are, you know, she's no different than we are, she's looking for accuracy and effectiveness.
Right. Mm-hmm. Related to that is the second primary issue. And that is, you know, because I know that we've talked about this many times, not necessarily on the podcast, but certainly as we're working here in the office. And that is, we have a patient that comes to see us who has been to see other professionals, perhaps, and they will come in and say, well, this is what I was diagnosed with, and they said that I need this treatment. And then we meet with that person, and we're thinking, that diagnosis doesn't seem right.
Right.
And so we start to talk about things, and we're working to understand, and we kind of do our thing to really understand what's happening. Right. And we end up with a different diagnosis. And then what happens is the patient really struggles and says, because especially when it has to do with their kids, because, you know, I remember one case in particular, the parents came in and said that their child was had autism. And I start interacting with this kid, and this kid did not have autism.
Right, happens.
You know, he had some social awkwardness perhaps, but he was not autistic.
Right.
And so I told her, I said, you know, I don't think that this is autism. I think that this is some language issues. I think that this is the approach that we should take.
Right.
And they never came back because they were upset. They had autism explained things to them well enough, and they were satisfied with that answer, whether it was right or wrong. They were satisfied with that diagnosis, and so they didn't want it questioned again. And so just as she's looking for a diagnosis to help for that explanation, you know, we would encourage you strongly to be flexible so that if you see someone and there are some potential changes or adjustments, you know, talk with them about it and try to understand why there may be differences. Don't get so caught up that, okay, this answers it and that's it, period. I'm not going to do anything else, because.
And at the end of this article, she says, and even if I don't get a definitive diagnosis, and she may not, okay, because of the nature of her symptoms, she may never get a specific diagnosis. Right. But now she's ready to accept that that's okay.
Right.
She knows she has some little things that are going on. They're not debilitating to the point where because she still works and has relationships. And she's beginning to accept that maybe I don't have a specific diagnosis.
Right. You know,
and that's okay.
Right.
She's beginning to accept that it might be something less, but at the same time, she acknowledges that she needs to do something.
Right.
It may be medication, it may be non-medication, but she readily acknowledges that she has to do something.
Right.
But she may do that in the absence of a specific diagnosis, and that's what she's willing to accept now.
And the way that we approach that, just for those of you who are interested in knowing, is, you know, if I'm stuck between a couple of different diagnoses, I certainly tell the patient that.
Right.
I say, yeah, there's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Right.
But our intervention, regardless of the two, this intervention that we're going to start with would handle either.
Would handle either one. Right.
This is going to be, the child with that came in with autism, and I thought it was more of a language disorder. I said, the start of our interventions are going to be
the same.
We're going to get speech therapy.
Still have to work
and we're going to work on some behavior management, some behavioral things.
Right.
If the child had autism or the child had a expressive and receptive language disorder, it would be the same intervention.
Right.
So as we now, and then our diagnosis will be further refined based upon the child's response to that intervention.
That's right. Because you always get to refine things. Once you do an intervention, in public schools they call it response to intervention.
Right.
Okay. So you do your intervention, but you're always evaluating efficacy.
Right.
And if it's not working, you change. If it is working, you adjust.
Absolutely.
Okay? So there is a. This is a process. It's not a single step. It's a process that you use across time.
Right.
You're constantly refining and redefining.
Right. Absolutely. So you know, look for those professionals that, you know, can help provide answers, who listen, who, you know, spend more than 15 minutes with you to try to understand what's happening. They don't just administer tests. They talk to you and work to understand your story, not just your values.
Right. Right.
Your test values.
Exactly.
So, all right, that's it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.